Hello, this is Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore, and you are listening to Catholic Baltimore on Q1370 WQLL. Catholic Baltimore is a weekly radio program hosted by the Archdiocese of Baltimore, airing each Sunday following the broadcast of the Radio Mass of Baltimore. We are grateful to our Catholic radio partners for sharing with us some of the contents in this program and for the opportunity to bring quality Catholic programming to the Archdiocese of Baltimore every Sunday.
This is Sean Kane, and you're listening to Catholic Baltimore. We are continuing our look at the Catholic schools in the Archdiocese of Baltimore, and today we're pleased to be joined by Father Donald Grimsky, who is the president of Archbishop Curley High School. Father Donald, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Sean.
Good. For those who might not be familiar with Archbishop Curley, can you give us some general information about the school, maybe a little bit about the history and the location and things like that?
Curley is located on the east side of Baltimore City, close to where the county lines and a lot of highways. It's the first of the archdiocesan high schools. It opened in 1961. It's an all-guys school, all-male school for years 9 through 12. And as a result, attracts a student body from really the whole metropolitan area, from both the city and five counties around the area. So we think we've become a very diversified school. And the school has been administered and staffed in part by the Franciscan Friars, conventual friars, since it opened. And today we are, of course, the friars are also supported by a tremendous lay faculty and staff.
Before we go any further in the interview, you want to talk about your own history with the school, and I know that you've been there before, and now you're in a second stint as president.
Yes, I'm a graduate of Curley, and this is the fourth time as a Franciscan that I'm assigned to Curley. I did what we called an apostolic year in the mid-70s, and then after ordination, I was there from 1980 to 88, again from 94 to 2001. And a year ago, I was asked to return to Curley and again serve as president. So it's been a lot of fun going back and reacquainting with what's going on, though I'd always sort of stayed up with that, as well as meeting a lot of people, a lot of alumni again, a lot of people who've been involved with the school over the years.
So you certainly, it feels like home to you, I'm sure.
It does, yeah. I've been there a lot of years, biggest part of my life.
That's great. I know one of the things that we continue to hear that people love about the school is that they really work hard to help students learn where they are in terms of their current level. If they've got a challenge, that there are programs there to help them meet those challenges. So could you maybe give us a little bit of a sense of the programs that the school has available to its students?
Right. We were founded as a college preparatory school, and we remain that. So that's our goal, is to get all of the young men ready for college. And the vast majority do just that. A few might choose the military or some other course of studies, but certainly the vast majority, 90-some percent, do that. We have different courses of study, though, because we know not everybody's maybe ability is the same in every level. Some students learn a little differently than others. So we have three courses of study that we identify as the Franciscan Scholars Program, the Cupertino Program, and the Anthony Program, taking the names of three Franciscan saints. But one of the things we see as unique, too, is it doesn't mean necessarily if you start a course in the Anthony program, you're going to stay there for all of your years. You know, the goal is to help you get reestablished, maybe learn a different way of learning, and then move on from there.
So it addresses maybe a deficiency or an area where, you know, you need some help that you might not need down the road, but it'll get you.
Oh, exactly, because students come, I think this year our freshman class come from 50 different schools. And so they're going to have a lot of different skill sets. They've maybe learned subject matter in different ways. Mm-hmm. And so it's bringing everybody together for that.
I think it's a great strength of the high school that it doesn't just say, okay, you've been accepted at Curley, everyone's going to learn this way. Keep up. If you can't, too bad. You know, the school says, hey, we're going to help you.
That would be unrealistic, really, and would be a disservice, ultimately, to students. You know, we want to be able to serve whoever we can, but get them towards that goal that I think has always been the goal of the parents, sending their sons there for a faith-based education, but also to get into college.
But I do think there is an unfair perception about Catholic education that there aren't the resources or that the schools aren't equipped to help students learn at whatever level they're at, whether it's at the lower end of the spectrum or the higher end of the spectrum. So I think it's always good to remind people that the Catholic schools do just that.
Oh, they do in many different ways. And I think so much depends on our faculty, too, who are willing to communicate with one another, work with the guidance counselors, have that level so we can help each student as an individual. You know, he doesn't become a number. He's a name. We know who he mm-hmm. is, and we're going to help him be successful in his high school years.
And one of the many changes I'm sure you've observed in your various stints at the school is how students learn in terms of their use and implementation of technology. So can you talk a little bit about?
Yeah, that has certainly changed in the years I was away from the school. And when I'm stumped, at least I know there's like hundreds of other people in the building who know more about than I do. So I can get an answer from a student or a staff member. We do have a one-to-one iPad program, and each student this year will have an iPad. And now that's become such a new way of learning. So assignments are done usually on the iPad and communicated. More and more textbooks are available on iPad. They're a great learning tool. They're being used for note-taking. And so many of the students have learned, you know, they're doing everything on that iPad. I'm so jealous because I had to carry around these big piles of books years ago, you know, and you don't have to do the same thing in many cases. And they have everything in that one place, and it's all backed up. You know, so no more excuses that the dog ate your homework. Yeah. You know, it just doesn't work anymore.
Right. And I would imagine that the teachers are using it to communicate with not only the students but parents as well.
Right. That's really a tremendous difference, too. I think about when I was first teaching how, you know, 4 or 5 weeks into a semester or a quarter, you sent a deficiency report home if you needed to do something mm-hmm. like that. Or you try to call a parent, how challenging that could be. But now with emails and the way grades and information is posted, at least on a weekly basis to the parents, yeah, parents know a lot more how things are going. And students know that communication is taking place.
Yeah, that accountability, I would suspect, will motivate them to stay on top of things because you no longer get to decide whether or not your parents see a report or
right.
a grade.
Right. It's a little different world, but yeah. it's a good world. And I think it's in many ways, Curly decided several years ago to move in that direction. It's been very exciting.
Yeah, I'm sure from parents' perspective, they're happy about it, too. Another thing that I'm struck by when I think of the school is the excellence of its fine arts programs. The band is all over town and I think is really well known. Talk to us a little bit about that and the facilities that are available to those students.
Really, about 35 years ago, the music program started to be reestablished. Mr. Dave Stauffer, who directs the band program, is in his 36th year, so he has really grown that. It kept growing out of each space it had. A choir program under Mike Gaffney came into existence. It kept growing out of each space it had. And so a capital campaign, one of its goals was to add an art center. And that Holdhouse Art Center was added 5 years ago. This will be the sixth year it's being used. And that has been a tremendous asset. So there's an art room, choir room, band rooms, practice rooms, a room to store the materials. And it's it really does give a lot of our students who come for that purpose or discover they have a skill set and ability to get involved in that. There are over 100 students involved in choir. There are 75 or so students involved in the band, and then different parts of the jazz band, the drum line, particular choirs, handbell choir. So the arts has really taken off, and I think it's become a really unique part of what Curly is all about. And I really have to compliment our arts people and our athletic people and so on, because they've made it possible too for our young men to be involved in multiple programs. So sometimes it would seem from some schools what you hear, if you're in the arts, you can't possibly play a sport.
Yeah.
And if you're in a sport, you don't have time to be in band. And really, our folks have worked together, and there are a lot of guys who are involved in both. And that really adds to their diversity of life,
sure.
and it really enriches the school. Each person, each group has an interest in the other's success.
It maybe breaks down some stereotypes or stigmas that may have been naturally associated with, you know, the music program versus athletics. I think
right.
it's a really good step for the school to say, you know, you can be a great athlete and as well as a great, you know, student musician or student artist. So, you know, I applaud the school for that. You mentioned the athletics. Do you want to touch briefly on some of the sports and opportunities that are available there?
Well, I think we have pretty much the whole range. We have 14 sports this year. Some have come and gone. There was a period we didn't have swimming. Swimming is back. There's been a time we haven't had ice hockey, but ice hockey is returning this year. So we have all of the traditional sports for the seasons, and many of the young men, the young athletes, are able to participate all three seasons if they would like to do so.
And high school hockey's really taken off in this
year. It has. And of course, it has its own challenges because there's you have to find ice time in one of the rinks around.
And equipment and everything
and
else.
And equipment. Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a lot of different things that way.
Yeah. How can people learn more about Archbishop Curley High School?
Well, certainly they have a lot of opportunities. We have a website, and it's www.archbishopcurley.org. And so all of that is there. They can also call the school and we be put in touch that way. If students are interested, particularly 8th grade students, we have Shadow Days, which will be beginning by mid-September. And we have open house on a Saturday and a Sunday, October 17th and 18th. Also, our admission staff and some who help them will be going around to the high school fairs all throughout the fall.
And you do run buses to Harford County and elsewhere, so if somebody doesn't necessarily live there near the school, they can you can get them there.
Yes, we have bus service going in multiple directions and out to Harford County, out along 795, down to Anne Arundel County, to West Baltimore.
Great. Father Donald Grimsky, thanks for being with us here today from Archbishop Curley High School.
Thanks, Sean.
Catholic news from the Archdiocese of Baltimore and around the world with the Catholic Review. Can't attend the Papal Mass in Philadelphia at the end of the month, but still want to get into the spirit? The Catholic Review has partnered with a Florida-based enterprise, Funds to Orgs, to send an item we take for granted to places overseas that are sorely in need. To include a work of charity in their walking pilgrimage to Philly for the Mass, Catholic Review editor Paul McMullen and Father Jack Lombardi of St. Peter in Hancock are asking for donations of pairs of gently worn shoes. The shoes will go to Funds to Orgs, which will send them to one of 26 partner nations, among them Haiti, Pakistan, and Togo. The shoes will be sold for profit by micro enterprises supported by Funds to Orgs, and the sales will benefit both a small business and whoever needs a pair of shoes at a low price. The Archdiocese of Baltimore benefits too. Funds to Orgs will give us a check based on the total weight of the shoes donated. Visit CatholicReview.org for more information on how you can help out. Speaking of helping out, have you ever considered serving on a school board? We spoke with three board members from Catholic schools in Baltimore City, Gambrills, and Severn to get a better understanding of what they do and why they do it. Check it out at CatholicReview.org or in our print edition. Finally, have you accepted the PI Challenge yet? PI is an acronym for Partners in Excellence, an archdiocesan program that provides Catholic school scholarships to low-income students living in the city. The challenge involves a pie to the face and a donation of $28, which is the cost of educating one Partners in Excellence student for one day. Visit CatholicReview.org for more information. From the newsroom of the Catholic Review, this is Eric Zygmunt.
Do you want to know more about what's going on in the church and the world than you can get from your daily newspaper or local TV? Read the only newspaper in the Archdiocese of Baltimore that covers the church full-time, the Catholic Review. The print newspaper can be delivered to your home every other Thursday, and you can get fresh news every day online at CatholicReview.org. Subscribe to the Catholic Review e-newsletter for twice-a-week updates. Find our app on Apple and Android, and follow the Catholic Review on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Wherever your faith takes you, Catholic Review Media is ready to inspire, teach, inform, and engage. Read it today, in print and online, at CatholicReview.org. Again, online, that's CatholicReview.org.
Catholic Baltimore takes a look at the men who have led the Premier See of Baltimore since its inception in 1789. With the help of Father Michael Roach, church historian and professor of church history at Mount St. Mary Seminary, we are offered a glimpse into the challenges and achievements, the education and background, and the leadership qualities of those men who have served as Archbishop of Baltimore. This is Sean Kane, and you're listening to Catholic Baltimore. We're here today with Father Michael Roach, continuing our conversation on the Archbishops of Baltimore. Father Roach, thanks for being with us.
Delighted to be here.
So we're here to talk about a personal favorite of yours, Archbishop Michael Curley, who's in a tough spot from the get-go because he follows, arguably the most popular Catholic statesman in all of the United States, let alone the longest-serving Archbishop in Baltimore. That couldn't have been easy.
No, and it was a great surprise to him, too. He wasn't a man who sought ecclesiastical preferment at all. Quite the contrary. He was a missionary in Florida when he was named Bishop of St. Augustine, and it was quite surprising that he was named Archbishop of Baltimore, the youngest archbishop in the country. No one could figure it out. They were expecting John Russell, a Baltimorean, Bishop of Charleston, to get the nod, but he wasn't in the best health. So Rome named this young, vigorous bishop from Florida. Probably his youth was one of the motivations, because Cardinal Gibbons was so very old, in his late 80s by the time he went home to God in 1921.
To understand Michael Curley is to understand his personality, and he had a strong personality. Wonder if we can figure out how that personality kind of came to be. Are there things about his background, his upbringing, his youth, his family situation that helps us understand the strong personality that he would develop?
Right, he was a tough Irishman from Athlone, as a matter of fact, and had a fine education. And was a fine student, won a lot of awards in the studies and the like. He was an idealist. He had wanted to be a missionary, and his first thought was to be a missionary, in the South Pacific. But the Bishop of St. Augustine came to his seminary and gave a talk on the American missions, and that really put him on fire, and he signed up to come to St. Augustine, which was desperately poor at the time. After ordination in his first parish, he said his first collection was 33 cents. So he took to growing orange trees to make some money for the church, as a matter of fact.
So he was industrious on top of being...
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. A real go-getter, no question about it.
So, and you alluded to that. So this young priest is... thrust into the limelight, into the premiercy, follows the lion that was Cardinal James Gibbons. What was it about his preparation that you think people liked most about him when it came to succeeding Gibbons?
He was a great talker. I mean, I can remember in my childhood people still quoting Michael Curley 20, 30 years later after they had heard him speak. He had a great turn of phrase and a powerful man, a powerful orator.
There's a great picture of him... in Washington, I believe, for the inauguration of Calvin Coolidge, he's standing up on the dais, and animated and full of passion in his speaking.
He really was. The sad thing was his health betrayed him in later years. His sight was gone, several other things. But he was a wonderful presence, very unafraid. He would take on anyone from the president down in his speeches and his sermons.
Right is right.
That's it. That is it.
He was unlike Gibbons to the extent that, and he makes this clear in a famous exchange with a wealthy donor in the archdiocese who sees him at an event and invites him to, some estate. And he says, "I didn't come here to be the bishop of the Catholic wealthy or something."
Absolutely. John Tracy Ellis loved to tell that story, and he would name the family, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. "I hope you will come and spend time with us," as Cardinal Gibbons always did. And he said, "I have not come to Baltimore to be the archbishop for the Catholic rich," and turned around and walked away. So he could be a little truculent sometimes. Mm-hmm. And Monsignor Ellis also said, "You can always have an exchange with your priest and say anything you want, but you don't put it in print." And he wrote to one very poor pastor, "Father, once again, you have shown you have the administrative ability of a 7-year-old girl." So he was very candid, to say the least.
Does that speak to his administrative style, his personality, maybe both? And what was his overall relationship like with the priests?
I think they respected him. But the ones I knew as a child who still spoke of him spoke very highly of him. He was tough, but fair.
What were the kind of the challenges of his day? What was the Archdiocese of Baltimore as a local church? What were the challenges that it faced that he really had to contend with?
Well, the Depression, for one thing. That was a terrible thing in Baltimore. Washington didn't feel it so much, but Baltimore did. And several things he wouldn't do. For example, the money had been left for the building of a new cathedral. And he said, "On the whole, I would prefer building a 4-room schoolhouse for poor black children than I would building a new cathedral." So he put that off for a while. Had a great love for the poor and was personally very, very poor. When he died, he had one suit to his name, and they had to send over to Catholic U to get the ritual for a bishop because he had given his way to a visiting African bishop. It is said that when the Cathedraticum in those days came in March, he'd given it away to the poor by July. Mm. So a grand heart for everyone who writes about him talks about his great personal poverty.
So he for sure would have been loved by Pope Francis.
Oh, I think in that regard for sure, for sure.
Though probably lacked the diplomacy that...
And no fear of controversy either.
For sure.
When he died, the Archbishop of Cincinnati, a Dominican, McNicholas, with whom he'd had many battles, said the best thing about Curley. He said, he was the warrior prelate and the almoner of the poor. Mm. Warrior prelate and the almoner of the poor. Nice way to be remembered as a bishop.
Absolutely. So he was also a big believer in education and helped the establishment of archdiocesan high schools, making that a priority.
Absolutely. And the great story, of course, is when he built Catholic High, they brought in the incorporation papers and had called it the Curley High. He put a line through it and said, Catholic, not Curley. Mm. So he wasn't into it for his own aggrandizement.
So the school was originally to be named
right.
Curley High School.
Because later on they named the school down the street.
Across, right.
Archbishop Curley. But in his day, I think we reached close to the highest number of Catholic schools in the Archdiocese of Washington and Baltimore. I think there were 159 Catholic schools. Mm. He had a great love for the rural schools, too, the country schools. He saw that even poor communities out in the counties should have at least a small Catholic school.
So you mentioned the Archdiocese of Washington, which is created during his mm-hmm. episcopacy, and in fact he's named
yes.
coadjutor or?
No, he is. He's the only bishop at the church that I'm had multiple dioceses.
How does the Archdiocese of Washington come about, and what does that kind of mean for the future of our archdiocese?
But it had to be because Washington was growing so great, and the suburbs also. He didn't like Washington. He thought there were too many church politics as well. He was addressing the priests there once and said, my independence is worth a lot more than a cup of tea, so you men stay away from those embassies and the like. It's a story we love to tell to Washington people to this day.
That must have been a challenge, though. I mean, running two archdioceses.
Absolutely.
I can't imagine.
No, he had two chanceries, as a matter of fact. He generally lived at St. Patrick's in Washington when he was over there. But I don't think he was ever comfortable in Washington. Some would say, the psycho-historians would say, it was because he was threatened and insecure around wealth and power.
Mm-hmm. And how does it all come to an end for him? What are the circumstances?
Yes, in Bon Secours Hospital. I even know a story about that. He was at Bon Secours where he loved to go, and he ran into someone, a doctor, and he said, my daughter Octavia is getting married. He said, I will marry her. So they'd change all their plans and have the Archbishop come to St. Ignatius and marry Octavia Chatard. So great stories about him. One time a nun was running down the steps. He said, sister, where are you going? She said, someone is dying. I must get a priest. He said, I'm a priest. I'm an archbishop, but I'm also a priest. He went and did the anointing.
Oh.
So,
always on the job and always willing to lend a hand?
Always the priest.
And he's said to also, because of his temper, has gotten into more than a couple squabbles with the Baltimore Sun at the time.
Oh, my. Oh, yes, yes. Columnists had compared Ignatius Loyola to Adolf Hitler, and Michael Curley called all the Catholic advertising out of the Sun papers. Now, finally, a truce was negotiated with the help of H.L. Mencken, as a matter of fact, while the Archbishop was away in Ireland for his summer vacation, and it was resolved. But that's a very famous story. He also got into the Jesuits over a fortune that had been left to them that was supposed to go to the diocese, the Stewart case.
Oh, my God.
So, I mean, it was quite the rain. People were telling Curley stories well into the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, and we're fortunate that they're still being told, I think.
Oh, I think.
So the final word on Michael Curley?
Well, I don't think I could beat the warrior prelate and the almoner of the poor.
That's what I was thinking, too. Father Michael Roach speaking to us today about the legacy and the episcopacy of Archbishop Michael Curley. Thanks very much for being with us.
Surely.
Are you interested in joining the Archdiocese of Baltimore and Catholic Review Media on a bus pilgrimage to the Papal Mass in Philadelphia, September 27th? Pope Francis is expected to celebrate an outdoor mass along Philadelphia's famed Benjamin Franklin Parkway. It will be a huge crowd and a great way to celebrate our faith together with hundreds of thousands of fellow Catholics, even if the Pope is just a tiny dot from your vantage point. or you can only see him on a video screen, you will want to join what will probably be the largest gathering of Catholics in the USA this year. For more information about the September 27th pilgrimage to the Papal Mass, visit tinyurl.com/CR-Philly Bus. That's tinyurl.com/CR-Philly Bus or call 443-524-3150, 443-524-3150. See you in Philly.
For 143 years, New Cathedral Cemetery has served the needs of the Catholic community of Baltimore and Central Maryland. New Cathedral is the only cemetery owned by the Archdiocese of Baltimore and is the final resting place for many religious orders and famous citizens. 125 acres of rolling hills, trees, and beautiful monuments, the cemetery is an oasis of peace and tranquility and is located off Edmondson Avenue just outside of Catonsville. New Cathedral is dedicated to the task of tending to the mortal remains of our dearly departed and has many more years of available space. If you are in need of a burial site, vault, monument, or marker, or just a respectful location to place your cremated loved ones, our counselors will help you through this process and make sure the wishes of you and your loved ones are honored. Visit us online at newcathedralcemetery.org, like us on Facebook at New Cathedral Cemetery Bonnie Bray, or call 410-566-7770.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Catholic Baltimore. As we prepare for the week ahead, let us do so in prayer together as one community of faith. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Let us also ask the blessing and intercession of our Blessed Mother as we pray. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen. May God bless us and keep us always in his love.